You're on Marketplace Tech. Not all our interesting interviews fit into 4 or 5 minutes. And that's why we created the Source Code, a place where you can read or listen to the original uncut version of a conversation with a newsmaker. In today's edition, Tim Armstrong, the CEO of Oath. That is the company that was created when Verizon bought Yahoo, and Yahoo and AOL merged into one. I talked to Tim Armstrong at the Makers Conference in Los Angeles earlier this month about the future of digital content and a totally connected world, and about the awkwardness of sponsoring a women's leadership conference, Makers, that doesn't have former Yahoo CEO Marissa Meyer at it. Here's Tim Armstrong in the Source Code. Tim Armstrong is the CEO of Oath. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Holly, good to see you again.
Nice to see you. So tell me, what's the deal with this conference? How long have you been doing it? What's the purpose?
Makers Conference is 6 years ago, we realized that there was no women's leadership library in the world. And we thought partnering with Dylan McGee, who's a great documentary producer, there was a project called Women 2.0, which had been around for 6 or 7 years, hadn't gotten funding. And we sat down with Dylan, came over to my house with my wife, Nancy, and we had dinner, and she told us about the project and how it hadn't gotten funded. So I said, at work, we're really interested in women's stories and content. Either the company will fund it if you can pitch it to the company, or if the company won't do it, we'll do it personally. And it turned out the people at AOL at the time period loved the idea. So we started it from scratch with Dylan and a few other people. And it's been 6 years. And today we've built the largest library of women's leadership stories from some of the most incredible women, you know, in the world. And it keeps getting bigger and bigger every year. We're in Los Angeles right now at the Makers Conference. That's sold out. And it's 500 groundbreaking women here. There's groundbreaking women on stage. There's also an amazing amount of groundbreaking women in the audience. So it's really turned out to be one of the best brands in the world for one of the most important subjects in the world.
Yeah. This day was bound to come, but you kind of couldn't have timed it better. What's this year in particular been like?
You know, this year has been a special year for Makers because it was kind of the collision of everything that the Makers team has been building over the years and the issues that we're seeing in the world today. And I think what Makers is doing now has become kind of a halo brand for women around the issues that you're seeing in the world today. And I think whether it's Me Too or Time's Up or Raise Your Voice, it is one of those time periods in the world where the world is shifting. And I think that one of the things Makers is able to bring to the table is that shift isn't just a movement. I call it a revolution. And Makers is one of those brands that's really a revolutionary brand that will help the movement continue to go on. And I think it happened to be fortuitous that we started it 6 years ago. It's gained this momentum. And you couldn't have predicted what this year was. But important year for Makers and an important year for women. Can't argue that. And I think it's only going to get more important.
And you've said that one of your goals is to get equal representation of women at Oath. How's that progressing?
Yeah, so about a year ago, we announced getting our executive teams and the top kind of 300 people at the company to 50-50 men, women. And I think that we put the goal, one of the premises we had was to change the way the company works. You have to treat every company has a diversity department, everybody has a diversity plan. And what we said is, we have that also, but why don't we create a diversity business model, like treat it like a business? So when we announced it, what we started to do is try to treat it like we treat revenue or the traffic we get on our websites and start to force ourselves to take the same level of risk and diversity that we do in our businesses. And that's turned out, it's taken us, being honest about it, it's been harder to get the company there. We're starting to get there now. As a matter of fact, we're making a lot more progress now than we were 12 months ago. But it really took a mindset shift. I think most companies don't treat diversity like a business model. And it took even our internal teams and even me as the leader to kind of refocus on it to the point where, you know, I have a weekly meeting about it. I have policies about whether or not we actually are inclusive or not inclusive of getting involved in more diversity things, because I'm at the point now where I'm like, we're not doing any more diversity commitments until we get the 50-50 working well. So I think we've made it really operational. And I told people at work, I don't care. If we fail at this, we're going to fail, but the learnings from it will be great for us and other companies. So let's treat it like a business.
It's interesting and a little awkward because you essentially took Marissa Meyer's job, and which makes me wonder what she's doing now.
Well, one is, I would say, you know, the merger of AOL and Yahoo, which created Oath a year ago underneath Verizon, was part of a bigger process that Yahoo was going through overall. And so I think when we got down to the point of closing the deal, one of the things we said was Marissa was going to be able to, of course, do what she wanted to do in terms of next steps and in terms of what the company strategy was and those things. And Marissa ended up announcing that she was going to go on to her next venture. And, you know, Marissa is somebody I know really well. I worked with her for 10 years at Google. And I think she's one of those leaders who's, frankly, at this, what I call the center of the economy, the new economy overall. So my bet is, you know, I'm a fan of Marissa's. I think the company really respects what she built at Yahoo. And as a matter of fact, half the executive team is Marissa's executive team from Yahoo. And what she does next, I'm waiting to see. But my guess is it'll be probably right at the heart of where the economy is. And even women's issues were really big this year. The change in the digital economy was just as big. And Marissa's one of the people on the planet who's got the leadership skills and background to be a major player in that. And I think we'll see her probably in a big role at some point.
Yeah. She is someone who I think sometimes is held up as an example of a glass cliff, right? Someone like when a woman gets set up to fail in an executive role. And I wonder what learnings that, if any, you've taken from that as you build, you know, an executive, a 50-50 executive team at Oath.
Yeah, I think, you know, basically what I would say in any learnings that we've seen is with the, you know, Marissa, by the way, is a great leader. And I think if you look at the assets that Yahoo has, it's one of the biggest companies on the planet in the digital economy. I think she did a very good job. I've said that publicly before. And I think the you know, Marissa and I also share a lot of history together. When we were both running AOL and Yahoo separately, we were both in proxy battles. We both had huge turnarounds to do in general. And I think that like the risk profile that Marissa took on in the Yahoo job was extreme. It wasn't another CEO going to do another role. It was a CEO going to tackle one of the most public turnarounds in the world. So I think she did a very good job of having a landing at Yahoo, which was tremendous. The learnings outside of Marissa that I see for our team and for our executives and for women's leadership, you know, and again, I'll be direct about this. I think, you know, number one is it's really about learning and mentorship. I think one of the things that I see it in meetings all the time, there's many meetings I go to, whether it's inside or outside the company. There might be one woman in the room and there might be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 men. And in the men's world in business over time for my career, it's been easy to have mentors because I typically around people who have shared a common experience with me or feel comfortable with it. I think for women, that reach out point of having mentors and getting that feedback, I think that's number one. Number two is, you know, it came up here at the Makers Conference, but, you know, I think there's a unbelievable opportunity for women to lead. And I think the skill sets in the economy right now of what's needed in the economy, you just heard, if you were at the conference, Amy McGrath, who's running for Congress in Kentucky, who's the first female fighter jet pilot, first person to fly F-18s in combat, you heard what she said. She said basically the skill set of a pilot is best served by being a female, by decision making. And I think that's the same thing that's true in the economy, at least I work in the digital economy. So I think women should be confident and aggressive that their skill sets matter a lot. And I think that getting help, I've got tremendous amounts of help in my career, and having confidence that you actually can contribute at a very meaningful level and having that self-confidence, those are two things you can't be successful without, whether you're a man or a woman. But today's economy, the skill sets that women bring are super, super important and a big opportunity.
So let's talk about Oath and the digital economy then. Sure. You have been in charge of combining what are essentially, as you say, two competing brands in AOL and Yahoo. How's that been going?
We ended 2017 above plan. We combined the companies faster. We moved the integration up by a year overall. So we took one of the most public mergers probably in the world last year and in what is probably the most important industry segment. And our teams, and there was a combined team 50-50 from Yahoo and AOL and Verizon, those teams all came together to accomplish, and I've said this internally, I said at the end of the year meeting, we got more done in the 6 months since the deal closed than any other point in my career. And I've been in other organizations that have gotten a lot done. And I think it comes down to the fact that there's a common vision. And there's a real – both companies have a long DNA of being in this economy and having sparked it in a major case. And I think there's a lot of willpower on our end to basically, as we go to the mobile economy, to move our companies back into – pole positions as the mobile economy changes. And by the way, if you signed up to work at our companies, you're signing up for hard work. So we don't attract people who aren't risk takers and challenger brand type people. So it's been a really fun experience. Also, 2018, we have a ton of work to do, and 2019 and 2020. But I feel really good about where we are, and I think we're going to continue to, you know, the same challenger brand Yahoo was and AOL was. With the Fortune 20 company in Verizon that's all mobile behind us, I think we'll be in good shape.
What do you think are the differences between the two, you know, that allowed AOL to sort of ultimately be successful, to make that sort of digital economy pivot where Yahoo couldn't quite catch up and ended up being the one that was acquired?
Yeah, I would say that at AOL, I have a saying, which is the first 5% of strategy matters the most, because in the first 5% of what you decide to do, it determines your journey over the next 95%. And one of the things we did, I think, in a fortuitous way, both at the board level at AOL, the management team level and the employee level or team level, is we decided to go into differentiated open spaces rather than compete head on in what I call the lion's den of going into other people's businesses. So we went into content before people went to content. We went to programmatic advertising before people went to programmatic advertising. We went to video really early. So while we were a small company competing against some of the behemoths in the industry, we basically were able to carve out a space. We bought the Huffington Post. We bought TechCrunch. We launched a new ad system, all those things. And we did that before the economy got there. And that's what allowed us to be successful. And by the way, Yahoo was doing the same thing, really. Marissa's team had basically been building in a differentiated way. Financially, from Wall Street's perspective, they got caught in a proxy battle, same thing we did. And ultimately, that determined probably the outcome more than what their strategy was. And today, if you look at our strategy, it's a great combination of those two strategies together. So I think both companies knew to survive, you had to differentiate and take a lot of risk, and both companies were. So I think it ended up together. But it ended up together because our strategies were probably more similar than different. And I still think today the 5%, the first 5% of our strategy we did 7 or 8 years ago has made the biggest difference in the world. The first step we took was in the right direction, and that's made all the difference.
And then now what happens? I mean, the digital economy is changing super fast. Google and Facebook have 90% of the ad revenue. What comes next?
Yeah, the next big movement, which is what you're seeing right now, is what happens when the world is connected together on a singular platform, which is mobile. And number two is every human is empowered with a very powerful device that's a two-way communications machine, content machine, community machine, commerce machine. And I don't want to sound hyperbolic here, but it really is the first time in the world that in the next 5 years you're going to have 80, 90, 95% of the world connected on the most powerful network ever created. And I think you can't underestimate when all the humans are connected on this network and ideas are shared and those things, what's possible in the economy. So if you look forward, my guess is just the human creative power, human intuition about where the world's going, connected with everyone on devices that people can be very powerful on, it's probably going to disrupt the whole economy. And I mean, I like to think about it from the medieval times, which is the Renaissance period basically was the unlocking of human creativity. I think we're on the precipice of probably the second Renaissance. And I get excited to come to work every day because of our company, because of the people there. But more importantly, I want to see what happens when the full human potential is unlocked in the economy. I think that's going to be just an amazing era to live with. Hopefully, I'll be alive and can live my years watching that develop, and I'll be a super fan of watching that.
That's such an interesting thing to be exploring, this idea of like a technological renaissance and human potential being unlocked in the midst, like surrounded by a conversation about how not everyone has the same opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, like when you talk about that renaissance, do you think, look, that could change the expectation? That could say, you know, I think we can safely assume you had a longer runway than Marissa Meyer when it came to those proxy battles. Do you see this as the kind of runway, the kind of renaissance that creates a more equal playing ground too?
Yeah, I think the if you just take a step back, half the world isn't connected, but will be. So that's a huge runway for future potential. Two is you see what's happening at this conference with women and the economy and what the upside is there. So let's say half of the population in the world has upside in terms of what their contribution can be. And you're going to see a doubling of the speed of devices and networks and the growth you're seeing in the economy today. So I call it the double-double, which is you're going to have a doubling of the world's population connected. You're going to have hopefully a doubling of what women are going to contribute to the economy in more diverse areas. And then almost every spectrum of technology is going to be doubling also. So I'm very bullish on the future. I'm also cautious that I think technology has a real responsibility to make sure that all those people getting connected and how they get connected and the work that gets connected does include everybody. And I think that's, frankly, a responsibility of a company like ours to do that. But I'm bullish because I've seen what human creativity and capacity can do. And we're about to – if we were a company, if the world was a company, the future looks pretty bright.
Sometimes I worry, though, that the world is about to become a company or maybe three or four companies. And one of those companies is Verizon. So, like, what – you know, at what point does your economy of scale get a little out of hand?
Yeah. I think you know, I was at Shimon Peres's 90th birthday and had a couple minutes to spend with him. This is a few years ago. And in my 15, 20 minutes with him, I asked him really one question. I said, for all your experience over 90 years, where's the world going to go? And he said three things. He said, number one is that companies and cities could become more important than countries overall. And I think that goes to your question. The second one is that people who learn how to create things in the new economy, if you're a creator or maker, you're going to have a big advantage overall. And the third one is that the political systems are going to have a hard time keeping up with the rapid changes in technology, and it's going to require the technologists to help the governments, you know, move forward. So I think I've seen it in New York City. New York City is almost as important as some other countries in the world. I think some of the companies you're seeing are important. But I would say this. Every time I grew up in the beginning of the internet, and there were some really powerful companies out there that everyone was afraid of that were too big. And I think every time that cycle happens, some really smart entrepreneur comes along or group of entrepreneurs, and they basically change the game. And I've been in three different tech cycles in my career. Every time when it gets to the point of the cycle, you start to be afraid that one company is going to dominate everything. You know, up pops the new entrepreneur. And, you know, next time I hope it's a her. I hope it's somebody who's diverse. I hope it's, you know, we've seen immigrants have a huge impact on the world. So I worry about that. I worry a lot more about the next person in the next garage because I've seen it three times in the cycles. And I think we'll probably see that again.
Although fair to say the Justice Department has also popped up in a couple of those instances.
Yes, yes. So you'll have a combination of governments watching out for people, but also people watching out for people.
And then on that sort of technology question, I'm actually curious about where you guys stand in this sort of new world of net neutrality. I mean, you certainly, you know, this is an opportunity for Verizon to bundle content in different ways now that they're, you know, assuming that this is the new order with respect to net neutrality. How do you see that potentially benefiting your business?
I think net neutrality is something that, number one, I think in the last cycle of it, you saw something kind of amazing, which is consumers paying super. When net neutrality first came up years and years ago, two decades ago, the only people who knew about it were people in the industry or people in government, and it didn't have the same level of focus. today, net neutrality is a public debate. I go to my kids' schools. I travel. You know, random consumers will come up and talk to me about it. And I know that that level of interest in making information free and making information available to consumers is part of the world today, and maybe the biggest driving force in the world today. So I think net neutrality is something that I think has been a huge benefit overall. I think net neutrality is something that will probably remain in place. And as the infrastructure gets built out, there'll be more, I guess, creative ways to continue to build out the infrastructure to make sure the networks get to everybody. You've seen how recently even the government's been commenting on how important it is to get more connectivity to people faster. So I think there's a lot of debate. I think the single biggest thing is the net neutrality debate has to end up in Congress and people need to vote on it. And, you know, one of the benefits, at least of being in this country, is you get to vote for what you believe in. And I've heard from tons of consumers about net neutrality. So hopefully it ends up in the system we all vote for and we all are a part of. And, you know, Congress comes out with a solution that makes total sense for consumers and the world.
So, but if Verizon came to you and said, hey, awesome, we built the first, you know, fully functioning 5G network and we're gonna put Oath content on every consumer device, everybody who is a subscriber to Verizon, they're gonna get it. Pre-installed. And you're the CEO and you're like, that's great for business.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, it is great for business. But I'd also say, you know, I think Verizon's one of the largest consumer companies in the planet. So I you've already seen this from us, is Verizon hasn't done anything. They've owned us for a couple of years now, and going on 3 years. They haven't done anything unnatural like that for consumers. So I think that Verizon, because they're so important in consumers' pockets or pocketbooks or in their lives, the best path forward for Verizon is to provide the single best service they can overall. And I think that you're seeing this from all, you know, Comcast owns NBC. You're seeing the Time Warner AT&T merger. You know, my guess is, you know, consumers, I forget what the famous saying is, you know, consumers are smart. It's the person you live with. So I think Verizon, all the other companies, I think they're going to be really careful about what they do with net neutrality and with content and those other things, because at the end of the day, the business is all run on the consumer, and you unless you're hiding under a rock, you know what the consumer focus and what they love is. You can see it in all the data and statistics. So I think we'll continue to try to do a great job for the consumers at Verizon. And O's job is to do a great job for Verizon customers, but we also go to AT&T's customers, Sprint customers, Comcast customers. You know, we're one of the largest partnership companies on the planet at this point. So we're happy to keep scaling.
Tim Armstrong is the CEO of Oath. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Great to see you.